It's time for Windows Weekly. Paul Thurrott's here. Mary Jo Foley's here. Lots to talk about. Build is next week. A little preview of what to expect and of our coverage. Some details about the Surface. And finally, a solution for those of you with cracked screens. And then Paul's take on the new Xbox Series X and the PlayStation 5. It's all coming up next on Windows Weekly. Windows Weekly comes to you from Twit's LastPass Studios. Stay in control when it comes to your company's access points and authentication. LastPass makes enterprise-level security simple for your remote workforce. Check out LastPass.com/Twit to learn more.
Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This is Windows Weekly with Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley. Episode 672, recorded Wednesday, May 13th, 2020. Misfits in the Foyer. This episode of Windows Weekly is brought to you by Worldwide Technology. Worldwide Technology's Advanced Technology Center is like no other testing and research lab, with more than $500 million of equipment, including solutions from key partners like HPE and Intel. And it's virtual, so you can access it 24/7. To learn more about WWT, the ATC, and to become a member of their growing community, go to WWT.com/twit. It's time for Windows Weekly, the show where we cover the latest news. Did I throw you?
No,
we were ready.
That's good.
I launched right into it.
Yep.
Scaring our hosts. They're getting a little skittish as we get into day, 473 America held hostage. Paul Thurrott, quiet, tiptoe. It's just us, Paul. He's at Thurrott.com. Thurrott.com. He's also a very nice person. That's nice.
And thank you, Mr. Rogers.
Hello, Mary Jo Foley. How are you today? She said all about Microsoft.com. Isn't that special?
You know what I just watched the other night? Forrest Gump. And you're sounding like Forrest right now.
We need more shows like that.
I literally just watched the Mr. Rogers movie. Also with Tom Hanks? Hanks.
Yeah, I haven't seen that yet. The best one is the documentary.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God.
Mr. Rogers is amazing.
Guy. Yeah. I mean, talk about not having anything in a closet. Like, there has never been. I mean, you'd have to go back to like Jesus to find someone like this guy.
I interviewed him many years ago in San Francisco on the radio show, and just such a sweet, gentle fellow.
Yeah.
You know, and he always weighed 142 pounds. No, 143. Because it was I love you, the number of letters I love you, 143.
Wow.
Never varied. Yeah. I'm always within 143 pounds of my target weight.
I'm too.
Yeah. It's reasonable.
So, hello.
I love you twice. That's all I'm saying.
Are we there yet?
This is the longest are we there yet ever, isn't it?
Oi.
I know.
It's like there's a light at the end of the tunnel, but I feel like I hear the tunnel collapsing behind me, and now I'm not sure what to think.
Do you think it's taking longer because we've lost
that's
her.
That's funny. We were just talking today, and she got a package, and she said, that's funny. She goes, I always thought this would happen someday when we were doing the podcast, and it's never happened. And then here we are half an hour later, and it happened again.
She's getting a package. Either that or Sirachi has decided to murder somebody in the foyer. She's about off to rescue.
Now we're all a little cabin feverish these days.
Do you think that the delay of Windows 10 2004 has a little to do with the quarantine or not at all?
No, nothing to do with it.
It's the normal target.
Well, no, it is a little late. We've been talking about this for a while. They've been updating it since they kind of finalized it months ago for a long time. And that's kind of unprecedented, but it was by design, right? So it's not something that's a surprise. Yesterday was Patch Tuesday, right? So yesterday typically would have been the day since they announced they're releasing it this month. Mary Jo, I got to ask you, did you get another package?
Yeah.
I just told them the story that you said, I always thought this would happen, and it never has.
This is an event now when there's a package at the door. This is like, wow.
I know.
It could be.
And they you have to buzz them in. Like, if you don't, they just leave, yeah. right?
So. No, that's fine. I understand.
Yeah,
and
sorry.
Who knows what it is? Toilet paper, coffee.
It could be many things.
Could be anything.
Regularly shaped vegetables.
Could be surface earbuds. Who knows?
Oh, are you waiting for those?
I heard I might get them. Ooh. I don't know. We'll see.
I want to see you wearing them on the next show. That would be cool.
I want to try them. They're really not handsome, but if they work, I don't care.
Yeah, that's fair.
Right?
They look like, and I've said this before, the new primitives. They look like gauges.
Yeah, they do.
In your ear. Yeah. Like your, you know, your lobes are going to get longer and longer and longer.
Yeah, exactly.
But are they comfortable? Yeah. Have you even tried them?
I haven't even tried them. Yeah, I don't know. I heard I might get them. Maybe.
Oh, that's rude.
You didn't try them on at the October event or whenever that was?
No. Did you?
Yeah. I mean, you know, yeah.
You did.
I mean, they sounded good.
Yeah. I didn't have a chance. That event was a little busy.
We're not going to have that problem for a while. But yeah,
that was a complaint
that I made at the event that there are way too many people in here and they're fighting each other.
Yeah.
They're fighting to put something in their ear that the guy before them just put in his ear.
Also, that isn't that appealing.
Someone actually grabbed my hand. I was moving a Surface laptop or something to get a picture of it. And he grabbed my hand and I'm like, what are you doing? And he says, that's, you know, we're doing something with that. I said, we're all doing something with this. You know,
we're doing something with that.
You don't have exclusive rights to the device. He was getting crabby with me. I was like, dude, geez.
Sorry, I'm doing something with that.
Exactly. So yesterday, though, was weird, right? Going back to 2004, right? Yeah. So it was Patch Tuesday, and they didn't announce this way, but they actually made 2004 available to developers yesterday, and they put it on MSDN, right? So it's there. And now I'm seeing Raph right now tweeting that Windows Server 2004 ISOs were quietly uploaded to MSDN also. So I'm like, okay, so it is kind of the start of the rollout, right?
They had to do that because they released the SDK, right?
Right. The SDK is out for 2004. But the thing they didn't do was have a post saying, okay, the rollout's begun, developers get it first, and then in X number of days, we're going to start the rollout to the mainstream and general availability. They didn't say that, right? But we think that day is May 28th. That's the rumored date.
2 weeks from yesterday, right?
I think so.
Is that right?
Or so. Let me see.
No,
that's
not
a good question. No, not so, really, whatever. Right?
Anyway, two weeks from this week, but...
2 weeks from tomorrow is May 28th. Okay. So, yeah, I know. The way this whole rollout has happened has just been part of it is because of COVID. This is actually one of those things I asked Paul why he literally
asked it up front, and I told him no.
Why
do you say that? Okay.
Because I feel like they were ready in March to start this rollout. I really do. I feel like we were like right on track and they were like, yeah, here it comes, blah, blah, blah. And then this happened and then everything just came to a grinding halt. That's how I feel like it happened.
Do you think there might be some concern that they don't want to roll this out when people are away from work and not surrounded by the normal support crew and all that?
I mean, they're going to do it anyway.
Yeah, I'd be
they're going to do it. Yeah.
I mean, the business is like that. Are going to have, you know, they have tools in place. They're not going to, it's not like people are knee jerk installing new Windows versions. So
that's true.
Yeah.
You know, individual.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I don't know. I feel like it is going to, they keep saying it's going to happen this month. Okay. We've got about 2 weeks left in the month. So it's going to start rolling out to the mainstream within 2 weeks, right? Unless something else happens, like a zero day or something. But I think we're out of all those things happening now and we're set. I heard it went to OEMs last week. That was the rumor too. So
everyone who gets this thing on a computer is almost certainly going to be installing an update like that day. You know, this is the way it is. Like there'll be a cumulative update. But whatever. It's not a big deal. It's fine.
Yeah.
I think it's fine. It is interesting to me that the new Surface devices, that just shipped to reviewers mm-hmm. have the previous version of Windows 10 on it. They don't even come with 2004. And
that's
it seems like
normal,
they could have. Yeah. Yeah. No, it is. I mean, given the timing, but it's just, it's kind of a weird bit of timing. You think with the delay, they might have been able to get the 24 on those machines, but.
But does it come, do the new devices come with the new Credge? They do, right?
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
And actually, I got to tell you, so I finally figured out what's going on there. There's some weird stuff there. So on the Surface Go, it ships with Windows 10 in S mode. And I think I mentioned this on a podcast maybe last week or the week before, but
yeah,
you get some messages where it says, hey, Edge isn't the default for whatever this thing is. Do you want to be the default? And of course, when I see that, I'm like, I'll just make Edge the default for anything, everything. Why wouldn't it be already? So you go into settings and you go to apps and then default apps. And there's a list and you get like, you know, a music player, whatever the things are in the list. Web browser is the last one. It's not there. And I'm like, there's no web browser option. I can't even. And you can set defaults in other ways. It's complicated. You have to go by protocol or by file type. It's really monotonous. Yeah. There's no way anyone would step through that. So I'm like, okay, that's kind of weird. Mm-hmm. And I thought this is the first time Edge has been pre-installed on something. So the new Edge. So this is kind of an interesting mm-hmm. test case. It's like, this doesn't mm-hmm. quite work right. What I figured out later was, it has something to do with S mode. If you get rid of S mode, the web browser option pops up, probably because they don't let you change the web browser in S mode. I'm sure maybe it's by design, but and then you can set it. And then when you do that, everything, you know, works normally. But the other issue there is, remember, and this is, I actually have a tip about this later, but remember the issue with signing in, you sign it, you turn on your computer for the first time. It asks you to type in your Microsoft account after you've signed into a network. Mm-hmm. With Windows 10 versions 1903 and 1909, and maybe other versions, but I know those two versions. If you've already signed into a network, you can't not use a Microsoft account. A lot of people are kind of upset about that. Mm-hmm. And there's a workaround for that. I'll talk about that later. Mm-hmm. But I tested the Surface Go with three different accounts, and on one of them, when I did a local account, like an offline account, as Microsoft calls it, you're asked to sign into Edge. And if you do, if you don't pay attention, it will sign you into Windows with that account as well. You really got to pay attention to that. It's really badly worded the way they do it. It's a little different. Like if you're familiar with you know, any of the built-in apps in Windows 10, like OneNote or Mail app or whatever, when you sign in with your account just to the app, it says, hey, do you want to do this for Windows? Or you want to just do it for this app? The way that the Edge things, the Edge thing has a slightly different message. It says, do you want to sign into Windows or do you want to sign into all the apps? And it's like, I don't want to do either one of those. I just want to sign into Edge. But actually, that's all the second option really does. So anyway, there's some weird interactions between Edge, the new Edge and Windows, and then with S mode as well, which actually, now that I think about it, might not be new news. But I hadn't looked at S mode in so long. I was really confused by this. So anyway, the short answer is yes. it is pre-installed.
The answer is yes.
Do we worry too much about 2004? I mean, I don't really think people care much, do they?
There's nothing. There is really not much going on. I can't say nothing, but obviously for technical users, WSL2 is now available. That's neat. What was the other big? The other big thing is the separation of Cortana from the search bar. So, it sort of made sense to me why those things might be commingled. It makes sense to me why you might want to separate them, because now Cortana as an app can be updated separately from the operating system, and for something like Cortana, that probably makes more sense. Plus, if you don't really care for Cortana and don't want to use it, you can just remove that one thing from your taskbar and still have search there if you like to have that. So this is a really subtle thing. It's not a big deal. And then the other thing to look at too, if you want to, is, you know, Microsoft has that what's new in version 2004 for developers. It's a pretty dry list, you know, I mean, if you as a developer want to target this version specifically, I just don't see anything dramatic. That
does restore the file system from the cloud in this version too, right? 2004.
Restore the file system from the cloud?
I mean, not the file system. Restore your PC from the cloud instead of from the files that are locally on your PC. Yeah. That's in 2004, right?
Yes.
But otherwise, very minor tweaks and kind of finessing, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think the stuff that's really interesting in Windows these days is not just in this version, because it's happening through apps, like the Your Phone app, for example, or if you're interested in those new app icons they're rolling out, like that stuff's kind of available, you know, different versions. It's not just 2004. Yeah. So, I don't know. I move back and forth between 1903, 1909, 2000, you know, 2004, and I don't know. It's not like you ever stumble over it. Like, oh, where's that thing I use all the time? You know, it's...
Yeah. No, and then meanwhile, they're testing in the fast ring a lot of features. Well, not a lot, a lot. Like a few tiny features that are likely but not guaranteed to be in 20H2, right? And if you look at the post today that just came out with the new fast ring build, 19628, they start talking about some people are going to see the name of this change to MN_release, which is manganese, which is the code name for 20H2, right? So, but they keep saying, but don't worry, Fastring is not allied to this build. And so you're like, okay, so why are some people seeing this name change, right? And what you should take away from that, in my view, is they're winding down adding anything new to 20H2. Meanwhile, they haven't rolled out 20H1 yet. Right.
Yep.
So
you know what, Tom? Yeah. This is great. This is the way it should work.
Right.
Yeah. And as the author of a book that has to change every time they change anything, I got to tell you, I really like this system. Nothing's changing. It's good.
Yeah. You know? I mean, they haven't said what we believe is going to happen in the fall, which is 20H2 will be a tiny, tiny update, like almost like cumulative update, just like 1909 was to 1903. We think that same pattern is going to happen this fall with whatever that version is called.
Are these updates dwindling in general?
They're getting small, right? Yeah.
The shrinking update.
We're going to see lots of changes to Windows in the next few years, for sure. I mean, at first, and probably most of it's going to come via this 10X thing, right?
Right.
And that will, I think this is a good system. We have this stable desktop operating system that works well. They don't really have to screw with it. It's fine. And then they can experiment over here in the corner with this other thing. And, you know, if it works out, it works out. We've talked about all that stuff, the strategy and everything. But to me, that's nice. I mean, I just, like I said, I don't know if before the show started, I mean, I spent literally all day yesterday trying to fix a computer. I like when things work, you know, and I like to experiment with the future and all this stuff. Of course, I'm interested in that. But, you know, it happening off to the side in some other kind of side project, I think is just fine right now.
I know. You know? I feel like the thing that's getting more interesting while Windows is kind of getting less interesting is what's going on with Your Phone, right? Like all these side apps, what's going on with Credge, all these things that are now independent of the operating system, but interrelated with it are way more interesting than the operating system. And I think that's the right way to think about it.
Yeah. And you could even broaden it out to all of Microsoft 365. You know, the things, no one's really looking for new features in Windows per se. It's, you know, and we might not be looking for new features in apps, but those are where the new features will come. And that's where it makes sense. Mm-hmm. That's where you really spend your time. If they're going to improve Microsoft Edge or Microsoft Word or newer apps like Microsoft Teams or whatever, that's where it makes sense to have improvements happening. You kind of look at Windows broadly and it's like, well, I don't know, you could spit shine some new icons or something, but I mean, we're not really... Yeah, we don't really have huge needs there.
No. And we were the ones, I believe, among many other people also, who were saying, why do they need to keep adding more stuff to Windows? Just like people have said about Word and other apps over the years. Like, I like it. Yeah. Just leave it like it is. Like, it's good. Do something different. Like, call it something else, like 10X or 10Y or 10Z or whatever, and make that your new platform, right? But keep Windows.
They had those two creator updates in a row, and it was like they were obviously very artificially trying to drum up some excitement.
Yeah.
And it was like, guys, you know.
Isn't there a precedent for like taking a product, freezing it, saying, all right, that's it, it's done, except for security updates or whatever. And now we're going to work on 10X.
New thing.
That will be the future.
For it?
Yeah. I feel like that's the kind of thing has happened in other products where we just go, you know, that's it. Yeah. No more feature updates. We're done. We have a new. It seems particularly a good thing to do with an operating system because you want a stable platform, and freezing it makes it like this is consistent, but it also gives people a heads up, and it gives you all then all the resources to start working on the next thing.
I feel like in Windows 8, there was a push, and then, of course, with Surface, there's this push, and then more broadly, I think HoloLens, Surface Hub, whatever, to bring Windows to other device types, right, to innovate through new things. And so I think you're right. Like, as far as a traditional computer goes, a desktop, a laptop, whatever, not a lot of need for new tablet modes and all this kind of nonsense.
Stop the nonsense. Yeah.
Mm. Well, that I think that's part of this, you know, not componentization, but modularization effort where you have this 80% of the system that doesn't need to be touched and it works fine. And if you want to experiment, you can do it with these new form factors and have new software that runs only on those new form factors. And I do think that was the point of Windows 10X and maybe sort of still is, but it's definitely a place where they can experiment at a really high level with user experiences and then at a very low level with that container
foundation. They do have the concept of an LTS, right?
Yep.
Yeah, long-term servicing branch, you mean?
Yeah.
Well, LTS is like the, what's that, like the Ubuntu Linux?
Yeah, yeah, that's what they do. But doesn't Microsoft have the same thing?
Yeah.
Yeah. LTSC,
LTSC. Yeah. Yeah. And that's like the it's not going to change. This is what you build your server on. This is what you build your accounting system on. This is what you, this is a
system. Except that's not the way they want you to think about it.
Oh.
No, because they still want you to upgrade. But the H2 releases, if assuming they do what they did last year, are supported longer than the H1 releases. Right. So the H1 has sort of become like this, you know, semi-major release, delivered like an actual feature update, potentially has new features. There really aren't a lot going on there. But H2 is basically a cumulative update. And it's, you know, it's had 6 more months to bake. It's and then it's supported for longer. Right?
30 months.
The basic. Yep. Yeah. Versus what is the other one? 18 or something or 12?
Yeah. 18, I think. Yeah.
18, yeah.
Yeah. But then there's also LTSC. So that in Microsoft's world is when you don't get updated for like years, right? And that's the version they say, we don't think you should put your servers on that. We think you should put like medical instruments like mission-critical kind of stuff, right?
Yeah, she's exactly right. So I just did I'm still doing a short series of podcasts with the Microsoft 365 guys, and someone from Microsoft was talking about that version of Windows, and this other guy said, hold on a second. We don't actually want individuals using this. Like if you're running Office, you need not to be on that version. It is literally for what she just said. It's for these no touch deployments that are, you know, you're not installing store updates and, you know, don't
update anything else if you're going to not update Windows. We're not going to.
Exactly. That's exactly right.
But you know, some people have used it that way, and Microsoft's tried to cut them off at the knees every time they do it.
That's
right?
Steve Gibson's favorite version, the LTSC. Yes. He loves it. But that's because, but he loves it because it doesn't have anything else installed. It's very clean.
Yeah. Yep.
Super signature Windows, you know.
Yeah.
Yep.
No games. No fun. Yep.
No. No fun. If you hate fun like me, it's the perfect version. No fun.
I think it'd be an interesting thing. I guess how tied are they to upgrade revenue? Is that's not important anymore, is it?
Not this way, right? Like they don't make money from you upgrading to a feature update.
No. That's the wrong way to look at it. It's they make money from what are essentially ongoing subscriptions. That's why, you know, when we talk about the migration from Windows 7 to Windows 10, I mean, honestly, for the most part, Microsoft doesn't see a huge change in revenue there because its biggest customers are simply paying the same amount every month that they were. Mm-hmm. They're just changing versions of Windows. What Microsoft wants to do, you know, is get them on Microsoft 365. And that's when you see a revenue boost. I guess from the perspective of an individual, if you were running a Windows 7 PC and you're like, okay, I'm going to go buy a Windows 10 PC, Microsoft gets a little something, whatever licensing, you know, because it came on that computer.
So yeah. It's just almost vestigial, this need to kind of get everybody moving.
Well, it's really, I mean, as bad as their strategy has been making this happen, the idea is still pretty solid. You know, you want to get as many people as possible in the same version of Windows because it's much easier to support that.
Yeah, that makes sense.
You have this matrix of supported Windows versions, and you have to release a different version of every patch for each one of those versions in many cases. Mm-hmm. That's why the 1903, 1909 thing is so nice. I mean, they can pretend they have two different versions of Windows, but those things are serviced by the exact same updates. There aren't two versions. Those things are literally the same version of Windows with just different, slightly different names. Mm-hmm.
They've also said, and I actually believe to some extent this is true, that when people are on the latest versions of products, they're happier users because they get new features that, you know, they've heard about, they've seen, and they're like, oh yeah, I actually want that. And now I don't have it. And I hate my life and I hate Windows and, you know.
I'm buying a Mac. I hate this world.
Right. But if you put them on like the latest versions of the Office apps and the latest version of Windows, some people don't even realize like it's Windows because it's so different from the old kind of slower, lamer version that they have. Right. So they always press that point. They say people are happier when they're on the latest versions of our products. And that's why we're pushing these so hard. And I'm like, maybe some. I buy into it a little. I don't buy into it 100%. But I think there's something to be said for getting
people don't notice and they disuse the thing they have.
Yeah.
Listen, we just spent 20 years trying to explain to people that Office is not part of Windows, and now we have to explain to them. Well, actually,
yeah,
kind of the same thing now. You know.
Yeah.
The same thing.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah. Windows 2004, though, we're almost there now.
Now, there's some good news for those of you who have cracked Surface displays, all four of you.
I know. How about this? Well, no, there's more than four people. This was called Friday Night News Dump who knows how this works. So it's funny. When we first wrote about this and talked about this on the show in February about some people going to bed, waking up, their Surface Laptop 3 screens were cracked and they hadn't dropped them or bumped them and the cat hadn't done it. Like people were saying, why do I have to pay for this? Like something obviously is wrong and it's just happening. And so we wrote about it. And after that, since February, every single week, I would ask Microsoft, is there any update on the cracked screen? Nope. How about this week? Any update on the screen cracking thing? Nope. So Friday night at 5:30 or so last week, I got a note from my contact who said, hey, guess what? We have an update for you on the cracking screen thing. I'm like, yep, Friday night, 5:30. The good news is if you are one of the people who this has happened to, you're going to get this repaired for free, which is... they're doing the right thing. Yeah. You just have to contact support, explain to them or show them somehow that this has happened to you and they're going to repair it. And if you've already paid out of pocket to repair this yourself, they're going to reimburse you. It doesn't explain what does reimburse mean there.
Are they going to add points to your Microsoft Rewards account?
We don't know what that means, but still, it's good. The cause of this was very strange. It was a very terse explanation. In a very small percentage of cases, a hard foreign particle may cause a hairline fracture in glass that seems to appear unexpectedly or with no visible cause. So a rock?
Okay.
Like a little stone?
Well, right. So I feel that this thing is purposely vague.
Yeah.
That it's probably a manufacturing defect.
Yeah.
Right? Not an external object. But, you know, it doesn't say that. I also feel that the language about how they will fix this for free during the warranty is kind of a legal thing. Mm-hmm. They're probably just going to fix this for free no matter what it happens if you have one of these devices. And if it is a manufacturing defect, we would assume that it has been fixed or will be fixed or whatever so that new devices don't have this problem.
Right.
But, you know,
we heard from a lot of people, right? Like I heard from three or four people directly that it happened to them.
Yep.
Not a lot. And
by the way, that was months ago. I have not heard from a single person.
Me neither. Right.
That's one way to kind of gauge the severity of something like this, because we tend to hear from complainers a lot, which is fine. but I don't know why this bothers me so much. if this is a manufacturing defect, and I feel safe assuming that it is, you know, we can at least agree it wasn't malicious, right? Like, Microsoft may not be very good at making computers. We could have a criticism like that, I guess. But they certainly didn't do this to screw people over. Like, they didn't do it to shave a half of a cent off of the course through the cost of Surface Laptop 3 or something. Like, I've seen people kind of claiming that Microsoft was bragging about how they, you know, reduced the number of parts or something, and that's clearly what caused this. Or, you know, that some people seem to know very specifically that it's some kind of a rubber grommet thing or something that's missing, and it was in 2, but it's not in 3. And it's like, guys, look, I they may or may not be very good at making these things. I don't know. I think they're beautiful machines, whatever. We all have opinions about that stuff. But, you know, Microsoft, I mean, they obviously don't want the screens to crack. Like, no. The reaction to this is crazy to me.
I know.
But
also the conspiracy theories, because of it seemed like it was happening to people who had the aluminum case and not the Alcantara, right? And yes. There was a whole like round of people going, yeah, you know, they didn't really want to take the Alcantara off, but they did.
That's silly.
That's what happened. It's like, guys, no.
Yeah, I joked about this. You know, the Alcantara was the thing gluing the machine together before. Right. I take that away, and it's like.
I have to say I'm happy it never happened to my Surface Laptop 3, but it made me nervous, right? I was like, oh, boy, I don't want to have this happen. So
did you buy you bought yours, right? Yeah, you bought yours. And was it an Intel? You bought an Intel one, right?
Yeah.
Or did you buy the AMD? So I mean, I guess there's all kinds of theories here. I mean, the screen should be the same regardless of the architecture. And I don't remember.
And 13-inch, 15-inch, right? Like, some people were like, is it only happening to 13-inch or is it also happening to both? Well, the repair offer goes out for both 13 and 15.
Right.
So that makes me think it's happening to both.
I think it could, look, this could literally have been a batch of these things. It could have been, you know, some mistake was made. I you know, but I hope they fixed it.
Mistakes were made. Yeah. Oh, you know, who knows? Maybe this one batch got bounced around in the ship a little bit on the way from China.
Yeah.
Who knows? Yeah. You know,
you don't know. I know.
I mean, they're fixing it and it seems to have gone away. So that's the good news. If it was a manufacturing defect, they figured out what they did.
It's anecdotal, but Mary Jo, as she indicated, I mean, neither one of us has heard from anyone in a while. And that is meaningful to me because, you know, I always think back to other events like this. Pixel 2 display, the Surface Book 1. You know, these were endemic hardware problems.
Yeah. And I think Microsoft, the difficulty for them is they don't want everybody who just broke their screen to come to them and say, now fix it.
Whoops, it fell on the ground. I'm going to tell them it's
cracked.
Yeah, your fault. No, this sounded like a really fine crack that just went all the way
distinctive.
Up from the base. Yeah.
It's distinctive. So so you're getting your Surface earbuds, but all of these now are available, right?
Some of these.
Not everything. Oh, not everything.
Yeah, about half. I would say, I think they introduced 6 things and 3 of them are now available. It's kind of strange, but yeah.
Yeah, so you can now take shipment of Surface Go 2, Surface Earbuds, and Surface Headphone 2. Surface Book 3 ships next week, right? May 21.
Yep.
And then the dock and the travel dock ship on May 26, but... weirdly, they're not on the Microsoft store yet, but they are on Amazon.
Interesting.
So you can order them through Amazon. I keep asking when they're going to be on the Microsoft store, and there's no word on that, as far as I know, for pre-order.
And I can report that Taylor Mason on Billions uses a Surface Book.
Yeah,
oh, really?
And I can report that he was paid to do that.
They were paid to do that.
Yeah, for sure.
They're a they. Yeah. That's the one, you know, the one with really short hair. But they're not all using Surfaces. I see Macs as well, I think. Although Mac,
it's like a hero villain thing.
Yeah, well, I'm wondering, but the Mac logo is covered, so you can't really tell.
Okay.
So Apple didn't pay them.
Well, it's like there are certain TV shows that like everyone on Magnum PI has Microsoft laptops. They even have Microsoft phones, which is really weird.
Yeah, it's weird to see a Windows phone. But it's a very, you know, it's such a distinctive laptop. I saw it last night. And yep. I said, oh, but not everybody does. But that one, the Windows logo is visible. So paid placement probably, yeah. Right? Yeah.
I mean, you see the Apple logo everywhere in TV. That alone almost justifies Microsoft putting their logo on the back of a computer.
I know, just to say.
Just to get
look,
it out
see,
there.
See. We were talking about this on MacBreak Weekly, and Alex was explaining that you do want to block out the logo. So you can see ThinkPad on here. Mm. That would be blocked out on TV.
Right.
Because you don't want trademark infringement. So it doesn't merely mean they paid for it. It kind of means like they said, yes, you can show the logo.
Right.
I'm trying to remember. Yeah, you see the Windows logo. But then there's a lot of Macs. I think there's a lot of Macs on there, and they don't have their logos are covered up.
Yeah.
Surface Go 2, a few more observations.
Yeah. So I've been using this thing longer. I actually wrote an article on that little keyboard, and I can't go to the doctor now because of COVID.
You wrote an article about it or on it?
You used it. Wow.
Yeah. And I'll never do that again. You know, one of the reasons I use an ergonomic keyboard is because early on in my writing career, I started getting that pain in the back of my wrists, you know? And I can, if I'm on a long trip and writing a lot on a laptop, I can feel that. And I felt it really strongly on this thing and right away.
Carpal tunnel. A couple
of observations. Yeah. Some of them are in this article. Some of them are since this article. I started using it with an external Bluetooth-based ThinkPad keyboard, which has that little nubbin thing in it, which I love. It's really neat. I still find the screen to be too small. It's just I'm 53 years old. I mean, I can barely see the damn thing. But so, you know, I'm hunched over and I get the cheater glasses on. I get the external keyboard. It's a really sweet setup. But
you look like Coach. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah, I look up at my eyeballs like this big through the glasses. But you know what? I will say the Core M3 processor works great. And so that combination of the faster processor, the 8 gigs of RAM, and the SSD storage all help to make this thing fine. And and when I say fine, I mean multiple tabs in a browser, using Microsoft Word, and even editing the graphics in Photoshop Elements. It works fine. It's fine. I have literally pegged the RAM at that point. I think one more app, if I installed Notepad or ran Notepad, it would probably crash the whole thing.
But more app and that's it.
Don't blame Notepad. Like
okay.
One more tab.
But, one more tab, yeah. But it works fine. It works fine. And that's neat. So that's good. It still has those other issues, you know, the small size and it compared to an iPad is thicker and heavier and, you know, less versatile, et cetera. But, you know, it's a nicely made machine. It does have that quality that I think we associate with Surface. So it doesn't really diminish the brand in any way. I think that's kind of nice. I try to use it as like a consumption tablet. So I use an iPad in the morning. I read the New York Times through that app. And usually these days I've been reading Google News as well. I read books through the Amazon Kindle app. And all that stuff is not available. Well, most of that stuff is not available on the Surface. So,
that's a bummer.
Yeah, like there's no New York Times app. So I have to use the New York Times website, which is terrible.
See, it would be perfect for doing a crossword puzzle, I think.
Is that because
you're using an S mode? I mean, if you turned off S mode, you could do it, right?
No, there's no app. They just don't have an app for Windows. They just have mobile apps. So you have to go to the website, and this is not great. Navigation-wise, the whole thing, it's just not good. It works. It's one of those things. It's just compromises. You know, I feel like there are people who, just want this thing. You know, it's weird what apps are there. Like Audible is there. Sonos is there. Spotify is there. Disney Plus is not there. You know, there's a web app. And, you know, whatever. That's okay. It's fine. I mean, it depends on what you do, I guess, and what you need.
And you're using the M3, the high end.
Yeah, I would never consider this thing otherwise. And then for me personally, I would never consider it anyway. But I think the M3 puts it over the top. And you, I think off the top of my head, it's probably adds about $230 to the cost. So that $400 computer is now really a $630-something computer. But that's before a TypePad. So now it's $750-ish. It gets expensive. And at that price point, it's like, guys, I don't know, maybe buy a real computer, you know. But again, you know, people, it depends on your needs. I mean, I'm a writer. I could never use this thing. So, you know, the reason Mary Jo bought the first one, I think, would apply to a lot of people. It's kind of a neat thing to be able to put something this small and light in your bag and travel with it if you can get away with using this kind of a computer. Or if you're out in the field, yeah. obviously. Or if you're a kid, you're a student, whatever. Mm-hmm. I mean, there are certainly advantages.
I can't even believe you could write an article on it because when I had the Surface Go 1, I tried and I'm like, I don't have huge hands, but I couldn't do it. And the keyboard bounced a lot. I feel
it is a short article.
It has to be a very short article.
It is literally that article that I wrote with it. and it is a short article. Yeah. The Surface Go type cover is a little thinner and a little bouncier than the Surface Pro one, Surface Pro one still has bounce. But you know what? Like, there's all these little elements to this device that I really like. Actually, that's a good picture to show because the keys on the keyboard are nice. The little cutout you can see in the bottom of the tablet part where you can put your finger in there to put the kickstand back, kickstand itself is a wonderful feature. You can't see it in this picture, but the buttons that for power and the volume buttons are just, you know, they're nice. So like Surface, you know, it's got that, it feels like a Surface device, you know, it supports the two level, the two angles on the keyboard. If you want to angle it up like that, at least if you don't, you can, you know, just lay it flat and you won't get the same bounce. You know, it's like, I get it. I wish it was bigger.
Yeah.
You know, I think a future Surface lineup would be interesting if Surface Pro went 13 inches like the X version and that new thin light form factor. And if Surface Go could adopt the old Surface Pro form factor and have like a 12.5 inch screen, but with the lower end components, that gets really interesting right there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, that would be really usable and that would be usable by me. And me traveling with a 12.5 inch Surface Go, which what today is a Surface Pro would be, that would be wonderful. You know? Mm-hmm. That'd be nice. I wouldn't use it every day at home.
No.
Right?
But, right. You just take it with you when you're like, I might have to do something. I need to be able to type it out if I do. Right.
Yeah. If it was a little bigger, though, I could take it on a trip and say, I will have to do something. And that's fine because this is fine.
Yeah.
You know, I wouldn't use it every day at home, but using it on the road would be fine.
Yeah. You wouldn't be writing the field guide to Surface Go.
No, using the Surface field guide Go. All time.
Yeah. It's interesting to see how many comments on the post are of people said, oh, I have the perfect use for it.
So, I know. A lot of people love it. A lot of people do like
Well,
it.
no, I wouldn't say a lot of people. I would say that's the literal number of people who comment on that post. So
that many people.
There are people who found use cases. There are.
But what it really boils down to is I just love Surface and or Microsoft and or Windows. And I don't want an iPad because I don't like, you know, Apple.
Right.
And it's always really specific. And I think the thing that people forget, even though I remind them again and again, I'm not reviewing a laptop because you can use it in some, you know, vertical, like whatever it is. I have to be able to recommend this to people generally. And I try to think like the feedback from this particular article really helped me kind of decide how I was going to review this because I looked at those are the two main use scenarios, which are like literally productivity, you know, typical productivity. And then as a iPad style consumption tablet. And I feel that they, it falls short in both of those, you know, but you know, whatever, everyone has different, it's fine. It's fine. The problem is this is like any debate today online, if it's politics or anything else, it's two sides butting up against each other. Neither one of them is giving an inch. They're not listening to what the other person's saying.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I don't care what you say, you're wrong. Or, but a lot of these guys, it's just like, well, that might be good for a lot of people, but for me, I'm not writing this review for you. If you already know you want it, you're fine. Relax, go buy it. It's fine.
Yeah.
You know, but anyway, that's the level of discourse today.
I know. That's why when anybody asks me for advice on what to buy as a PC, I'm like, I can't give you advice. Like there are too many variables, right? There's way too many variables. What I think is a great PC, you may think is a terrible PC. I just have certain needs you probably don't have because my job all day is typing all day long. And that's probably your job.
One thing I really like on the Surface, and I think you've come around to this, is this 3x2 display.
Yeah, and I hated it at first, and now I do like it.
It's really,
I really like it. I've always liked it. there is a nice compromise, though, and you don't see this in too many different places, but Dell is doing this, where you have a 16 by 10 display. So mm-hmm. if you look at something like the new XPS 13, and I think today they just announced the 15 and the 17, mm-hmm. they have 16 by 10 displays, and they're super low bezel. And it really lets you get the maximum display into a minimal amount of space. And it gives you some of the advantages of the height. You know, mm-hmm. it's kind of a nice in between because 16 by 9, we've gotten used to this thing that was, you know, this goes back to Media Center for me. Second version of Media Center, they kind of went from 4 by 3 to 16 by 9 because that's, you know, the way TVs were going at the time, HD TVs. And it's just not optimal for productivity work. You know, tablets like an iPad is probably 4 by 3. It helps them work in portrait mode better. You know, they don't look like they're these giant stretch out things.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, the Surface Go does have that.
You know, it was funny. At the beginning, I didn't like it because I felt like there was too much information density when I looked at the screen. I see too many of my emails now. I don't want to see all of those at once. Like, I want to see this many because this is what I got used to. And once you get used to the way it looks, you're like, oh, dude, this is better, right? Because I can see more.
Well, yeah, textual information is unique. Yeah. Vertical space matters. It's great for programming if you use Visual Studio. Yeah. Being able to see more lines of code is also advantageous, especially that when you compile stuff, they put up all these extra panels and your code window gets, you know, shrunk down.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I've come around.
And then anything else? The rest of the hardware is coming this month, later this month. Yeah.
Hey, we should talk about the Duo. The Duo is still happening.
The Duo. The Android-based dual screen Windows Duo?
No.
Android Duo? Microsoft Duo.
Surface Duo.
Surface Duo.
Yeah. So when they postponed the Neo, which is the 10X dual screen device, everybody's next question was, what about the Duo? And as of the past few days, it looks very positive that the Duo is continuing because they just updated again the emulator for the Surface Duo.
That's a good sign.
Given what you just said, by the way, shouldn't it have occurred to anyone at Microsoft that when you mentioned publicly that you're not going to ship the Neo this year and that Windows 10X is going to be single screen displays, that you could have a throwaway sentence that says,
"You could.
This change does not impact our plans for Surface Duo."
Yeah, you could. But that would mean you're communicating clearly, Paul.
I know. I keep tripping over that. I'm sorry.
This is good news. They also said there's going to be a session at Build on dual screen development for C# developers. So that also an update on the Surface Duo SDK. So there's stuff happening at Build around the Duo for people who are interested in that device. It's happening. Now, when is it coming is the question, because last we heard was holiday 2020, but then there have been hints that maybe they'll seed some devices earlier than that to people outside Microsoft, right? I don't think they're going to give everybody a Build who watches Build a Duo, which I saw some people speculating. I'm like, no, it's not going to happen. No.
Right.
But I could see them starting to seed this outside and letting some people test it. I mean, people at Microsoft, like Brad Anderson, who works on Microsoft 365 as a corporate VP, he has one. Like, he flashes it in pictures all the time and talks about it. I'm like, people have them and they're testing them. Frank has one, Frank Shaw, right?
Yep.
I said to them, if they need somebody to try it out, and not for lappability, obviously, but someone who uses Android and Windows 10, I'm here for them. I put myself out there.
Wow. So, take one for the team.
Somebody has to take one for the team. So I just keep suggesting this like every week. I kind of resuggest it. Like, by the way, if you guys are seeding any devices and you want to bring one in New York and have people try them here in New York and make sure they work in New York. I could help.
I mean, it's interesting. I'm curious about it.
Me too. Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. I'm curious about it. I don't think it'll be the device for me. I really don't, but I'm willing to keep an open mind. I didn't think Surface Laptop 3 was going to be the device for me. So
I always thought that was the device for you.
No, I'm glad they've upgraded it now to a point where I take pride in holding it and showing it off to people.
It's the sandstone thing, isn't it?
It is. It's it is not beautiful. Having the fuzzy keyboard.
It's beautiful and no Alcantara.
It is. Right. No, it's a great laptop. I've got nothing bad to say about the Surface Laptop 3.
Yeah.
No, it's beautiful.
And by the way, ever since this Thunder Spy exploit came out a couple of days ago, showing that all devices with Thunderbolt 3 ports are vulnerable.
Please don't go down this road.
To the evil maid attack. It now looks like Microsoft was pretty cagey.
This is like, so I'll respond to you in the manner I responded to this accusation or credit, if whatever you want to call it, on Twitter, which is, that's like saying, like, that's why I stuck with a horse, so I can't get pulled over for drunk driving. You know? Like, it's just, okay. I guess.
It's a non-trivial attack, and somebody has to have physical access to your machine.
Sure.
And as we've always said, if people have physical access to your machine, all bets are off anyway. But just, maybe Microsoft was new in their heart of hearts. Direct memory access to the PCI bus wasn't a good idea, and they just didn't want to give it to you. And, by the way, Dell's latest, the new 15 and 17 XPSs, also do not have Thunderbolt 3. They have USB.
Oh, is that true?
Yeah.
Wow.
USB 3.1. I think USB 4, the PC makers are starting to think maybe USB 4 is really the way to go with this.
Microsoft has always said, and the funny thing is, I've heard this from multiple people internally too, that the reason they were slow to USB-C and are now slow to Thunderbolt is because no one's ever asked them for it. and it sounds ludicrous because people like me and people who are into technology have been complaining about this for years. I think I wrote an article in 2016. Welcome to the Thunderbolt 3 era, something like that.
Yeah. Didn't happen.
Here we are, 3.5 years later.
Now I'm wondering. Now I'm wondering.
But then you got to wonder, who are the customers telling them this? Like, who does Microsoft listen to when it comes to Surface hardware? I mean, is it possible?
I think they listen to Joey in Des Moines.
Well, I'm thinking it might be more like companies like, GM.
It could be. Yeah, big companies.
Where they're we don't want any advanced features here,
Nope. Well.
No, I mean, I know that's.
Because they got a lot of evil maids over there.
Yeah.
Don't you think it could be about component supply as well? Because you have to be a pretty big OEM to be able to get in line to get certain components, right?
Microsoft is a small PC maker. They absolutely don't benefit from the the scale volume that Dell, HP, Lenovo gets. But then again, this is one of the few companies on Earth shipping 3x2 on all of their laptops. True. Those displays have to be expensive.
They have to be made.
They'll spend money there.
That's true.
I think the other thing is that Thunderbolt 3 peripherals are expensive, not that commonplace. I would bet most people don't know the difference between 3.1, USB 3.1 and Thunderbolt.
No, I'm sure they don't.
The big use on Apple's side is with displays.
Yeah. Mm. Mm-hmm. Most people with a laptop aren't going to be hooking up multiple displays,
and that's not
right.
Apple's market is maybe heavily tilted toward the creatives.
Right.
Microsoft would love to be part of that market, and you can see that in a lot of the products they make. But I mean, we're really talking about bread and butter productivity workers here. I mean,
yeah, I think that's right.
They're probably just using the laptop.
Mm-hmm. USB 3.1 peripherals are much more available. They're less expensive.
Yep.
For most uses, people aren't going to really care about the speed.
There's so much stuff like this in tech. We spent years complaining about the removal of the headphone jack from phones. And then in my case, at least, I think this is the way most people will go eventually, even if they're not there yet. You just end up with wireless headphones worrying about these.
You go along to get along.
You do. Yeah.
So like your laptop has one USB port, right? Or I guess it is two technically now, right? The full size and a little one probably. Laptop 3 must. Yeah.
She doesn't even know because you know what? She never connects anything.
But that was my point. Because I used to look at a laptop and I'd be like, okay, well, I need to connect a webcam and a microphone because you never know. I might have to do a podcast. And, you worry about all this stuff.
Yeah, I just connect my dock to it, and that's like where I care about what I can
and
connect.
You're docked,
right?
And at that point, you're a desktop. Yeah,
you're fine.
They may have known what they were doing. All
good. Whoa! Hold on a second.
That's, don't give me too much credit here.
Back up the bus.
You're a spunky little PC maker.
I will. They made decisions on purpose. There's no doubt about it. I still disagree with some of the decisions they made, but by and large, I love those products. I think they look great, and I love traveling with them. And
I think it's a mistake to ask people too much. I think, you
know,
that's
what Steve Jobs said, right?
Yes, that's right. And all those connectors on those laptops, that's what people said they wanted, but I bet you they rarely used them, that kind of thing, you know?
Yeah. Well, that's why I always remember, there's all these weird little ports you can have, like micro SD ports for some reason. Mm-hmm. It's still kind of a big thing on
I don't know. Laptops. That's because it's like easy to put in. I can't, what's like, the
what's
point?
Using a micro, what is
what are you using that?
Like, I mean,
a full-size SD, I'd use it with my
like
camera.
Paul, you know, I get this question, like, Paul, if you put a micro SD card in the Surface and then moved one drive so it only went to the micro, it's like, no, I just use it. What are you talking about? Like, I don't.
Yeah.
I think we overthink things.
Overthinking. Hey, let's take a break. Microsoft 365 coming up. They finally fixed the reply all issue.
I know. Can you believe it?
We'll talk about our build coverage, Mary Jo and Paul's build coverage. And, there's even some Xbox news as we get closer and closer to the Xbox Series X and the PS5. But first, a word from our sponsor, the great folks at Worldwide Technology. WWT, I visited the ATC in March. That was an amazing, eye-opening experience. Started in one little building 10 years ago. I think it's in three or four now. It's got $500 million worth of equipment. Now, why would a company, WWT, that does enterprise consulting and sales and helps big companies, why would they have an advanced technology center, you might ask? Well, it's a testing lab. It's a research lab. That's where WWT's engineers, they're working. In fact, I met a lot of them. They're in those labs every day, beta testing new solutions based on the latest and greatest, for instance, HPE technologies. They build reference architectures and custom integrations for customers to help customers decide what's the best technology stack for them, see results faster, do proofs of concept and pilots, all with much less investment. The Advanced Technology Center is an incubator for IT innovation. You'll get schedulable and on-demand labs like, for instance, HPE's InfoSight Lab, along with hundreds of other labs representing the newest advances in cloud-based machine learning to provide global insights into the status and health of infrastructure, all in one location, and a whole lot more. Look, this is a place for you as a customer and WWT as a provider to learn about products before they're launched. It's a sandbox where they can try stuff. Customers can look at the best solutions and choose the right one for them. It'll reduce the concept time from months to weeks. Speed to market, like that. And this is all very important nowadays, right? They also offer, and this is really spectacular, so they built this $500 million advanced technology center. You can use it too. They offer lab as a service as a dedicated lab space within the ATC where customers can perform their own programmatic testing using that entire vast ecosystem of technology WWT's already built, including the HPE InfoSight Lab and Intel, the little disruptors, the fast-moving ones like Equinix, they're all there. And you can use it without coming to St. Louis 24/7 anywhere in the world. They started this last summer, but boy, that was insightful. That was really prescient of them because now people don't want to travel, but they still want to do the testing. They still want to try before they buy. They want to kick the tires. You'll get access to articles, to case studies, all the tools that make a difference in today's fast-paced worlds, including those hands-on labs. To learn more about WWT, their Advanced Technology Center, to become a member of their growing community, go to WWT.com/twit. WWT simplifies the complex. WWT.com/twit. Worldwide technology, delivering business and technology outcomes around the world. Out of that beautiful facility in St. Louis, it's incredible. They built a new building, outgrew it, built another new building. I think they might outgrow that one. It's really the headquarters, the epicenter of all this exciting enterprise technology. All right, back to the show we go. Paul and Mary Jo and Microsoft 365 in the news. Put your ears in, Paul. Let's talk about Microsoft 365. Reply all storms. Man, it's actually comedic. When you send a letter to a whole bunch of people in the CC, which you shouldn't do anyway, and somebody replies, but not to just you, but to the whole thing, and then people go, stop, get off, I don't, just unsubscribe.
It's worse than that because this has brought Microsoft to its knees at least a couple of times.
Has it really?
It has.
Well, yeah, because yes, if it's a company-wide email. Yep.
The really famous one was called Bedlam, 1997, the Bedlam email storm, where like everybody at Microsoft was doing reply all. And
25 years later.
I know. So what took 25 years, right? Tony Redmond asked this over on Petri. He's like, why did this take 25 years to fix?
So someone, you know, people, and I don't know why I'm focusing so much on this, but some guy on Twitter was like, this is a social engineering problem. I don't know why we're trying to fix it with technology. And I was like, I don't know, maybe because we have motorcycle helmets for people. It's the same thing. Like,
I know.
Sometimes you just got to protect people from their own stupidity.
You do. You know? Yeah. I mean, the people who are most affected by it are large organizations, right? Like, mm-hmm. if it's just 5 people, 10 people, and everyone starts going, yeah, take me off this list, who cares, right? But when it's 10,000 people, right?
I could never make it in a big company. Even my small company, I'll wake up someday and there'll be like well, we're on Teams now, but like a Skype thread where it's like over the weekend, like 18, you know, comments in, and it's like, guys, seriously, you know, like, I mean, we only have 5 or 6 people working at my company. I can't even imagine how horrific this would be.
I know.
In a big company, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. But it's good. They're fixing it finally in Exchange for Office 365. So that's good.
Yep.
It's called Reply All Storm Protection. Right.
Yeah, literally, that's the name of the feature. That's awesome.
Yeah. So,
it's going to improve over time, too. It's actually pretty hard-edged right now. It's like they have a certain criteria. This is what we're doing. But, I mean, obviously, it's, you know, it's, Exchange Online or whatever. They're going to, you know, make it controllable by policy. You as an organization will be able to decide what the thresholds are, et cetera, et cetera. So they're looking at, you know, they want feedback right now. But they also just kind of rolled it out, you know, so it's like, we feel like, I don't know, maybe everyone's working from home. We're not paying attention or something, but I think it's smart that they got it out there.
Yeah.
I don't know what took so long, but.
Yeah. Good question. Yep. It's a hard computer science problem. That's my guess.
It really isn't. But. It isn't. This one seems like a simple computer science problem.
What about Smart Reply? I see you put that in our notes too.
Yeah, that was related. It's a look on the web, which is Exchange Online, right? Yeah. So this is Office 365 commercial, but this is the feature you see on mobile email clients. You know, you'll send me a message like, hey, I'll meet you at 10 or something, and there'll be these pre-formatted replies down there. Yeah. You know, okay, sounds good, or, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. Basically, just adding that functionality across the board.
That's a googly kind of thing to do.
It is.
Yeah. No, but it's useful. I find myself using. I use those. Yeah, I use them in email. I use them in
on my
the
phone.
Text messaging
I use them a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because sometimes you just, you know, you're on the go and you want to just get something out there. You want to acknowledge it. You know.
Yeah.
And some of them are pretty good. It's not like Clippy where it's like, get out of here. You know, they tend to be pretty useful. Mm-hmm. But I, you know, the trick for Microsoft, of course, with Outlook is when you hear something like Outlook. You have to kind of decipher it because what Outlook are we talking about? Outlook. There are so many different Outlook clients. Windows and Mac have different native clients, completely different apps. Mobile app on iOS and Android. There's the web apps, Outlook.com and Outlook on the web, which service free and paid Microsoft 365 or Microsoft account holders. I mean, they're all a little different, you know?
Yeah. And you know what's weird? Lately, I feel like the place that new features show up first when you say Outlook is Outlook on the web. That's like where the like things are showing up first, right? Which is kind of almost weird. Backwards to me. I don't know.
I agree.
Maybe it's a place they can test them more easily and fix them more easily. I don't know. But a lot of times when something brand new gets announced, if you can get them to tell you which version of Outlook, it's Outlook on the web.
This might be like what were we talking about? That was like, oh, like Windows 10X, where they might want to test it. I don't mean to describe it as a limited audience, but a very particular audience in this case, where you know, administrators in those organizations can, in many cases, determine which features even show up. They want to see how people are using them. They don't want to just dump it on the unwashed masses in Outlook.com necessarily, you know, until it's they know it works properly. I don't know. But you're right. Yeah, more often than not, when they because Microsoft has a bad habit of just saying Outlook, you know, you have to go look and see what they're talking about. And you realize they're talking about Outlook on the web. Which is one Outlook, you know.
Yeah, one of the
one
many.
Of several Outlooks. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd like that. And I guess like we could include the Mail app in Windows 10 in this list too. In a way, I mean that's sort of an Outlook. Yeah.
Though not called Outlook.
Yeah, I wish we could figure that out.
No, then there's Outlook for the phones. Is like, yeah, I know when they say it's coming to Outlook, I'm like,
really, none of these are getting it at all, except for the Outlook.
Nothing we just mentioned. Yeah,
yeah.
OneDrive is like that. They have a bad habit of just saying OneDrive, and many times they're like, referring to OneDrive for Business.
It's like there are not enough names to go around. We just
They're overloading acronyms now.
Yep. Too many. Let's see. Microsoft Family Safety app.
Yeah. This is now starting to roll out. They announced this back in March. They said they were going to have a family safety app for iOS and Android. And so as of May 11th, they started making these available to a limited number of users in preview. So this is like limiting your kids' screen time across PCs, Xbox, and phones. Location sharing. If you have teenagers, driving reports you can get on, like, did they go where they said they were going to go and all that kind of stuff. So all these things that you can control or limit or watch. The one interesting thing, I when I found out about this at first, I said, so if you have teenagers, can they turn these off? And they said, yes.
Yeah. Okay. I was curious where you were going there because I will say, so the two things to me were, this seems like the type of thing that should be built into the platform. So why is Microsoft doing this? Right. Mm-hmm. Many people probably don't realize this, but Microsoft has had something called family safety or some variation on this type of parental controls for many, many years. Right. So back when, this started out, you know, Windows was still the central concern. It was kind of Windows based. They brought it to, Xbox over time, et cetera. But, you know, the world today is most people are doing things on mobile. So Microsoft, this is Microsoft bringing it to mobile and bringing it to those mobile platforms that, you know, people actually use. So that makes sense. But why, you know, like why Microsoft and why, yeah, like you could just, they're being very upfront. Like you could just, we understand that people could just turn this off. We ran into this with my own son when he was a teenager, he'd be off doing stupid stuff with his friends and he would turn off like the, find my iPhone location feature, whatever it's called.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And we'd call him and say, nope, you know, but this is the way Microsoft kind of presents this. It's like, this is an opportunity for you to have a conversation with your child about, and this is what it's about. It's about personal responsibility. And in the case of the parents, you know, just parenting, you know, so, the reality of the technology is if the kid knows what they're doing, yeah, they could turn all this stuff off. Mm-hmm. But from a parent's perspective, it's like, well, if you want the phone,
right,
you're going to have to leave it on. Otherwise, we're going to take away the phone.
Yeah.
And I can tell you, we went through all kinds of stupid stuff with my son, unfortunately. he's a good kid, but he would do stuff like, I'm at the gym. Here's a picture of the gym. And there's a clock in the picture, and the clock is at a completely different time. It's obviously something you took like a different day.
That's so cute.
Stuff like that. Like, it's just stupid.
Chip off the old block.
Yeah.
Well, I was going to say, kids are technological geniuses, but they're also, you know, not particularly sophisticated in some way. So, but yes, anyway, I noticed the same thing.
I was wondering if it was. So when it comes out, it's going to be available. There'll be a free version available to anyone of Family Safety, but then certain quote, like premium features. So location alerts and safe drive safety reports. You're going to have a Microsoft 365 family subscription to activate those. So that's how they make their money, right? Like they'll give you the free version and hope that you'll upgrade to get the premium features and subscribe to Microsoft 365. So yeah.
I don't think anyone's carrot stick Microsoft 365 for this feature, but
if you are
a family using this, which is it's a good deal for a family for sure.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's fine.
Now, we did this before the show, so I think we can recap. Build is coming up Tuesday, the keynote with Satya Nadella. We will stream that live starting at 8:20 a.m. Pacific, 11:20 a.m. Eastern time. Yep. And that's right before iOS today. Then, so Satya's only going to talk for a little bit, though, for 20 minutes.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And then it's, is it Scott Hanselman?
Imagine Cup. Well, then there's Imagine Cup.
The Imagine Cup. That's where...
Another 20 minutes.
That's where, is it high school or college kids?
I think it's
show their work.
Well, maybe both now. It used to just be college.
That was fun.
Where they compete. Yeah. They compete for prizes for best ideas and inventions.
You have a panel of judges who, you know.
Maybe one of them could solve COVID and win the prize.
Yeah, I bet you there are a few having to do with that this time around.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure.
Then after that, Scott Hanselman speaking. Is Scott Guthrie? You said there was another Scott. Who else?
Yep. Scott Hanselman, then Scott Guthrie, and then Rajesh Jha, who runs Office and Surface.
And then the reason tune in, Paul and Mary Jo Foley.
Right. It's not really, even though I'm on the schedule, I have no idea. it's still kind of confusing to me. Like, we'll talk to him before this, but. When you look at the schedule, you see a couple of things. They're going to rebroadcast things, right? They're repeating. So it's kind of like a CNBC telecast or something. Mm-hmm. And then the topics are very broad. You know, the Scott Hanselman talk is every developer is welcome. And I think that hopefully we'll learn something about Microsoft's new, new focus for developers, but I have a hard time getting past Windows. So Microsoft supports a variety of languages and frameworks and environments and blah, 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 across everything they do. So that's Azure. It's on the client as well. So there's a lot of stuff there. But there's an Azure thing with Scott Guthrie, which is very interesting for developers specifically. And I'm personally interested in building the tools for modern work, which is the Rajesh Jha session, which will be Microsoft 365 focused. And then there's a day two as well. And, you know, Microsoft, a classic. We were briefed about this ahead of time. We're like, we're not going to talk about the future. It's not going to be any vision stuff. There's literally a session called The Future of Tech with Kevin Scott, Microsoft CTO. Yeah. Power Platform day two as well. That's very interesting. And then an Ask Scott Guthrie. I guess it's like an AMI kind of a thing, I guess.
We don't know yet what the sessions are. The whole thing streamed.
So we don't know what the session, they don't have schedules for the session?
No, they haven't shown us the session list, you know, with the breakouts of the specific session.
Keep some of this secret so there's some news and, you know, we'll see.
Yeah. So, Tuesday is the day one, Wednesday's day two, Wednesday's the future day, and then that's it. 2 days, you're done. In, out. Done.
In, out. Boom. Chim, boom. Ka. Now you know everything.
I'm always a developer.
Go develop.
I am. I'm a Microsoft developer.
Go forth and develop. That's going to be fun. We'll cover as much as we can Tuesday morning.
I think there's going to be some interesting news. And I hope for, you know, that little world I still care about, you know, with the Windows developer stuff.
No, they said there was going to be Windows stuff, so there has to be. They promised, Paul. They promised.
They promised they weren't going to talk about the future, Mary Jo, and they literally have a session that is the word the future. So, I will see.
Yeah.
And then the following day we'll do Windows Weekly, right? At a normal time. You'll be back from your stream.
Yeah.
Back
it's
in the apartment.
Be tiring, Leo.
Honestly, shouldn't we do these conferences this way from now on?
Yeah. I think they will do a lot of conferences this way. Yeah.
More people can attend. The information's the same. The only thing missing is the face to face.
I know. And there'll still be need for that. But, man, they're going to get good at this. This is going to be – I think this is going to be the norm. I don't mean to say it's going to be everything, but I think this will be – it will be like this more often than it isn't.
Yeah, I feel
me
like
too.
It will be too. Yeah.
I know.
And I can't say I mind. Do you really relish going to a conference? Even, you know.
You know what? So, Leo, we have a smart display in our kitchen, and we have a second one somewhere else in the house. And because it's May, it tends to bring up pictures from that month.
Yeah.
And I've seen lots of pictures of me and Mary Jo and Brad and Raphael and Joey Snow and all those guys from Microsoft. And yeah. It's, you know, you pause. It's funny. Like a lot of times it's like pictures of my kids and my wife and my family and everything. And then because I'm in them, you know, there'll be pictures of me with these guys that I see, like when we go to these trips. And, you know, you pause. I mean, I miss that. I mean, I already miss it. You know, I want to see those guys.
You know, my reaction when I see it is, oh God, they're going to get sick.
I know.
They're all breathing on each other.
Stop all touching it. Each other. What are we doing?
Stop. What were we thinking?
Hugging each other. It's gross.
Oh.
Yeah. I don't know. I miss doing face-to-face interviews with the execs because when you do them remote, you don't get the same kind of interaction, right?
No, that's for sure true. So, I've just been doing so much like of what time. I do remotely because I moved to Petaluma and I don't like to go to conferences. And so triangulation was remote. Everything we did was remote. Mm-hmm. You're remote. And I just...
Yeah.
I'm used
What's
to it.
His name?
By the way, I never get sick.
We've been physically accosted at these events. We've been verbally abused. I miss it.
No, I miss the meetups. The meetups, you know, like we joke about them, but
those
they're
were fun.
It's fun to meet the fans.
Those were
it
fun.
It is.
Yeah.
It is.
Well, I guess it's not over. I mean, I'm sure.
No.
It's hard to imagine. Why would you do a CES ever again?
Never.
Well, I had been asking myself that for years anyway.
Right.
but there are certain things. Like, I feel like Build, to me, like I said, you know, favorite show. I like the topics. I like the people that are involved.
It's true.
I like being part of that crowd, you know.
Yep.
Ignite was just the huge Microsoft show. So, I mean, Ignite was also great. I mean, you come down the hotel elevator. I'm heading to breakfast. Donna Sarkar is sitting there in a chair working on a laptop, hang out with her. For a couple of minutes, people walk by. They're saying hi. It's like
that's cool.
It's like a giant family reunion in a hotel.
Yeah, I do love that. Yeah,
you know.
Yeah,
I mean, it's that stuff is.
Yeah, podcast expos like that kind of all the podcasters get together. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
we'll get some of it back.
I think we will too. Not CES like events, though. I think those are done.
Maybe. Yeah.
I know I'm going to have freakouts. Like, I'm not going to, there'll be some huge crowd in some room, and I'm going to be like, I can't do it. Like, I just can't do it. I know that's going to happen, but I also want to see people, you know. Mm-hmm. Do one on ones, be like a drive through.
We'll see. Speed dating.
Speed conferencing.
So this Microsoft versus Google thing continues, or I'm sorry, versus Amazon, the Jedi fight. Mm-hmm. They're not using lightsabers, but they might as well be. They're cutting away at each other.
It has gotten awesome. This is awesome. This is like the dream come true. Remember when like Apple and Samsung were actually going to face off in court? And I was like, here we go, baby. It's going to happen. Yeah. Because this doesn't happen, you know, and it's happening. Not that they're in this case in court, but they're fighting like children. It's beautiful.
Totally like children. Mm-hmm. Oh, man.
Yeah,
it's awesome. Devolved. It has devolved.
Microsoft publicly accused Amazon of secretly petitioning to keep this Jedi thing going. And Amazon's response was a baby tantrum in the form of a blog book. If you haven't read it, strongly recommend reading it. It's hilarious.
And, you know, it reminds you, Frank Shaw, never quit the Marines. Once a Marine, always a Marine.
Well, I mean, in the context of Jedi, which is Department of Defense,
right?
Having an ex-Marine write your blog post for you is probably
doesn't hurt.
A bad PR move. You know? And it's full of a lot of stuff. Like, if Amazon cares about the troops they seem to care about, maybe they would just get out of the way so we get this thing going and keep them safe.
Yeah. Oh, you're kidding. Really? Wow.
Oh, yeah. It's beautiful. That's beautiful.
No, and then Amazon waved a little flag in their blog post. We care about the troops. And I'm like, oh
my
man.
God. Guys. It is.
Can the judge just rule and let's just move forward, right?
I just gotta read this one part of the Amazon response. The Amazon listed about 17 what they called facts. I don't think there's a fact in the entire list. It's beautiful. But they said Microsoft is doing an awful lot of posturing. This is literally what it says. I'm not paraphrasing. We understand why. No one knowledgeable and objective believes that they have the better offering. What?
Only idiots think they have
Microsoft
a better
Microsoft wants us just to be quiet and go away. So, yeah, they do, actually. That's true. It's awesome. Awesome.
Man.
So yeah. When does a judge rule on this? I mean, how long is this going to take?
He already ruled. It's over.
Oh, it's over.
That's the problem. It's
no, it's not over.
Oh, well.
It's not over.
Look, the DOD already came back and said, look, we investigated this. This is how this was done on the up and up. We made the decision.
That was the inspector general, though. So the judge, I think, who's overseeing the case has frozen the bid until August and said, yeah, we're going to figure this out.
Oh, this could go on for a while.
It's coming down to pricing of storage. This is like the one.
Oh, that's another awesome of part of this. I should have mentioned that. I'm sorry. You're right. This is actually the central part of this. So these companies both bid. Amazon overbid. One of the reasons Microsoft was picked was because the $11 billion contract, as we're calling it, was the lower bid. So one of Microsoft's problems now is you lost.
Oops.
But now you know what our bid was. So now you can just say, well, we'll do it for 10.9.
Right. You that's know, not fair. Right.
I mean, that's not how the process works.
No, that's not how it works.
So that's actually a big component of this. I find this to be.
I know. You love this stuff. I'm like, come on. Let's just move ahead.
I agree with that, too. But I mean, these guys are just. I thought Frank's post was professional and correct and
he did
whatever. And I did.
I thought it was a little marine temper tantrum, but it was cute.
Oh, temper tantrum. Interesting. Okay. Well, the Amazon thing was unhinged. And again, like I said, I strongly recommend anyone who is interested in the company should read this. It is unbelievable. It was like something that like the lawyer wrote drunk at 3 o'clock in the morning and just posted to the website without telling anybody. Like, it's crazy.
I was surprised they posted it.
They never post anything like that.
No, they never do.
Nuts.
So I was surprised.
Yeah. Anyway, I enjoyed it.
It's like a soap opera at this point, really.
It goes on and on, too, like a soap opera. Xbox News, PS5 on track for 2020. Didn't Microsoft, aren't they doing a stream of games or something this week?
So actually, I was just thinking that. I guess we didn't talk about this. So last week, Microsoft held the first of what will be several monthly events where they show off gameplay from Xbox Series X.
Did you watch them? I forgot to watch.
Yeah, I watched the whole thing. It's great. By the way, I'm the only person that thinks this. I watched this thing and I thought, well, first of all, I don't really care for most of the games per se. Although the new Assassin's Creed game looks amazing, the Valhalla game. But, you know, whatever. I mean, I play this kinds of games I play. But what I was looking for was you had to watch it in 4K. It was gorgeous. And they didn't do that many games. I think there were maybe 10, possibly 12 games. They were all third-party games. I think next month's event they're going to do all first-party games. And they're trying to do what they used to do at E3. If you ever paid attention to a video game E3 conference, it's literally introduce a guy from the studio. He talks about the game for a few minutes. Someone stands there with a controller and plays it for a couple seconds. And then they go on to the next game and they do bam, bam, bam. They go, that's the whole event. And so it was like that, except it was more time with each game and fewer games, right? So it was just the initial gameplay demo. And I thought it was awesome. I pinged a couple of my friends and said, you got to watch this on YouTube. You got to watch it. Make sure you turn on 4K. I think this thing looks amazing. I just thought it looked amazing. And a lot of people like, I don't know, the games weren't that interesting, you know. I didn't think of the graphics were all that great. And I was like, what? to me, it just looked great. But two things happened in the past 24 hours on the Sony side, which is, I think are also interesting. I don't have this in the notes, but I think it's Epic Games has the Unreal Engine. They put a demo out today of the next-gen Unreal Engine running on the PS5. And it also looks amazing, like 4K. You know,
Sweeney said something like, once you see this PS5, you're going to have to rethink how you design PCs.
Interesting. Yeah, so I think it looks amazing. It does. It looks amazing. So I think both the PS5.
We're going to have fun this Christmas. We're going to need it too, by the way.
Yeah, well, I was talking about Call of Duty last week and going from like Modern Warfare 2, which came out in like, say, 2009, I think it was. So over a decade ago, it's that game is showing its age. Of course, it's really low res. If you play the multiplayer, it looks terrible. They do a remastered version of that; it looks awesome. The modern Call of Duty games look awesome. I look at these graphics from the Unreal Engine demo or from the Microsoft thing from last week, and I think to myself, like, the next Call of Duty game is going to look awesome. Like, on these systems, it's going to be amazing. And it really opens up the possibility for being able to do anything you wanted to do. It's sort of like when you saw Jurassic Park for the first time. You're like, they can make any movie now. Like,
right.
It's just wide open.
Nothing, you know, everything's
anything
possible.
Is possible.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what these consoles.
How exciting. Enabled.
Yeah. So the only, I mean, this is sort of news. I mean, I think PS5 and Xbox Series X, unless something really goes south, will both launch this year. Sony this week said that it will. They're on track. Probably going to have limited supply. They may have limited audiences, right? I mean, these things will be pretty expensive. People won't be ready to spend money on something like this yet because of COVID. We'll see. But Sony said, yeah, we're going to, you know, we'll do it. We'll see how that looks. So we have months to go. And I have the wrong name in here, but the PlayStation 4, the current version of the console, that thing is selling a lot less than it used to. So I don't have the exact figure in front of me, but I want to say in the past quarter, it sold 1.3 million, 1.2 something like that million units. A year ago, it was 2.6. A year before that, it was, you know, double that, whatever. So it's going down, but they've sold 110 million units overall in 7 years, which, you know, is incredible. It's second only to the PlayStation 2, which is the best seller. And I believe they're just about to overtake the PlayStation 3. So their current console obviously did great, but we'll look for the next gen and see which were these two.
Do people buy both ever?
I mean, I do, but yeah. Most, I mean,
that's kind of our business.
Yeah.
Playing games.
I mean, I wouldn't. Yeah. Right. No, I guess not. I mean, I think that's one of the things
people
that
hurt
Xbox last time.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Sony has accused Microsoft, speaking of accusations recently, of waiting to reveal the price until Sony releases their pricing because they want to be like undercut
bid.
Sony this
they
time.
They want a bid. What's the bid?
They got screwed last time with that. They were $100 over where they should have been.
So. You said expensive. They're both going to be $500.
My guess. Yeah.
Somewhere around there. Yeah. That is just pretty pricey. And yeah, if it's that much, of course you spend $1,000 on a PC pretty routinely.
Yeah. Consoles are in a weird place because there's this gigantic market for casual gamers who are just playing games on whatever device they have, like a phone usually, right? And then there's this tiny market, but it's really lucrative for PC gaming because those guys spend a lot of money. And then in the middle is consoles. And consoles are like I want it to be almost as good as a gaming PC, but I don't want it to be as complex or as expensive. And I don't, you know, like I that's how I prefer to play. But I feel like the console market overall, I don't know what it is. Like, I don't know how to compare it to things, you know.
COVID could be good for this because if we're still, you know, boarded up, come the holidays, and I see no reason to think we won't be, then you might be looking for something to do. Mary Jo might buy one of these.
No, let's not get crazy.
Well, okay, but this has never taken off, but I've been surprised that things like Apple TV or Roku or Amazon Fire TV, all of which at one time or another have had or still have game controller availability, or you can turn the remote around and use it like a mini Nintendo controller or whatever. I'm surprised those things aren't more popular for games just because it's a device you might already have. It's there, you know, it's a bigger screen. I don't know, that stuff, it never really took off. I mean, a console is such a specialty device. You know, you spend $200 to $500 on a box that you put in where? A room, like a kid's room? You put it in the living room and then you're competing with people that just want to watch TV. It's kind of a weird area. I don't know. I mean, I have a screen dedicated to it in my office, you know.
Wow.
But I'm not normal.
Wow.
Well, I'm just saying, you know, I mean, I don't have one out in my living room because why would I?
Right, because you're going to play in the privacy of your own.
Yeah, I don't want my wife seeing that I'm killing people all day long. She would hate that.
Yeah. His boxer shorts with his black knee-high socks.
Yeah. It's just dust all over my chest. No, I mean, it's terrible.
No good. Let's get our tips and picks and all of that and beer. It's time for the back of the book, starting off with the tip of the week from Paul Thurrott.
So I mentioned this last week, and now I want to correct something I said because I think I finally figured out how this works. I believe,
yeah.
Well, in Windows 2, 2004, pro or home, that you no longer have to worry about that weird Microsoft account thing and during setup, right? That you will be offered an offline account. I believe that's what I've seen. So that's, I believe they've finally fixed this, but the previous couple of versions, especially, I think only on home, if you connected to a network connection during setup and then you got to the screen, we had to sign in, that offline choice, it's gone.
It was gone. Yeah.
Remember?
Right.
And there's all these different kind of ways to bypass it, but here's the one that works every single time. In the if you look at what it says type in your user account, your email address, or your phone number. So just enter 555-555-5555. And hit enter, and it says, this doesn't look like a real phone number. And then you will get the offline account.
Oh. Like, what if you do 867-5309?
309. Yeah, I haven't tried that one.
Okay. This looks like it would be funny if you said, this looks like Jenny's phone number.
Yeah. Right. It's like, is your name Jenny? Jenny@outlook.com. So that appears to work 100% of the time. So even if I'm wrong about the 2004 thing, if for some reason you buy a new computer, it has 24, and you go through that process and you like, oh, I wanted to make a local account or an offline account, the 555 thing should work every time. So that's just good to know. Just something to keep in the back of your head.
I always did this because if you said if you make a local account when you first install Windows, you can name it Leo, for instance, and then the subfolder there'll be Leo instead of some Fakaka Leo's Windows 10 PCX3947 or whatever. And I like that, and I've always done it, and I was very perturbed when they took that away, that local account. Away. Yeah. I end up using a Microsoft account, but that's after the install's done.
Yep. And by the way, in 2004, it still does that weird thing where it does have that weird thing if you choose your Microsoft account. I experienced that on Surface Go too. So
it's ugly.
If that kind of thing bothers you, it's still a reason to sign in with the offline account. I also think
some people don't want to have a Microsoft account too, and there should be a way not to do that, I think.
Yes.
You shouldn't have to have a Microsoft account to use Windows. Should you?
Yeah, I agree. No, I agree.
I mean, if you're going to really use Windows, it's fine. But
You're going to sign into OneDrive. You've got an Office 360 or Microsoft 365 account. You want to do that stuff with the apps. You've got content in the movies and TV app, maybe, or whatever it is, like Microsoft Edge auto sign. If you're, I think a mainstream typical user, there's nothing wrong with it. By the way, it helps secure your PC more too. You can do you should always have dual factor.
And if
you can do all that stuff.
Password, you can recover it. There's lots of good reasons to do it.
Yeah, there are definitely advantages. But you're right. If you just don't want that, I mean, you shouldn't be forced to do that. If you have Windows 10 Pro, I don't believe you ever had to worry about this. I think this was only home.
Just for home.
I agree. I never understood why they did that. I mean, I guess I kind of understand why they did it. I don't agree with it, but anyway, you can work around it.
Your app pick of the week.
Yeah, so I'm losing track of the timing on this, but sometime last year they announced they were bringing the Halo Master Chief Collection to the PC. They took a long time to put out the first game. They're doing them in the game chronological order, right? Not the chronological order that the games were released in. So the first one they released was Halo Reach. I want to say that came out late last year. And then about a month or maybe it was 2 months ago, they released the original Halo Combat Evolved Anniversary Edition, right? And so today they released Halo 2 Anniversary Edition for the PC. It's an awesome game. Great single player campaign, fantastic multiplayer on the PC. It's 4K, 60 frames a second or better. Everything's been remastered. It's beautiful looking. It's only $9.99 if you just want to buy this one game. And there's some fun stuff here. Like, to me, the highlight of Halo was I played the first one a ton of times too, but that was basically just single player. This was the introduction of real multiplayer. The multiplayer in this thing was so good, they used it as the basis for multiplayer in Xbox Live, which came out shortly after this. Halo 2, Halo 3, and even like Halo 3 ODST are all fantastic. So I think Halo 3, we'll probably see that, 3 months, 4 months, whatever the time frame is, sometime this year as well. But this is a high point. And this one, actually, this is the last Halo game that came out on the PC until recently. They had a little games with Windows Live push, remember, with Windows Vista. This was one of the two big games. The other one was, Gears of War. the original Gears of War, which they had an extra level in the PC version with the dinosaur in it. Or whatever that thing was. The looked like a dinosaur. The giant monster looking thing. Anyway, it doesn't matter. But Halo 2,
$9.99.
It's good stuff.
I'm going to get back into video games. I'm kind of at a loss for things to do. I'm tired of watching TV. I don't want to read any more books. Listening to music doesn't do it for me. I think I need to blow some stuff up.
I think I'm going to play this one through. Last week I talked about Modern Warfare Remastered 2, Modern Warfare 2 Remastered.
Yeah.
Since then, I went back and I've been playing the first Modern Warfare Remastered, which I'd already completed in remastered form on the PlayStation when it first came out, but doing it now on Xbox. And I like these are good games, you know, like
that's single the thing. Player games. The game is what matters, not the technology. The game.
Yeah. So I think, you know, Halo 2, like this was a good one. Like, and it's going to be full of those, you know, I talked about video game memories. I mean, Halo 2 is like this. I mean, this was years of my life, but also a group of friends who we played starting with Halo 2. This is before we switched to Call of Duty. It was Halo 2, then Halo 3. Like these were the games we played together as a group, you know. It's they're really good games.
And now the Enterprise pick of the week.
This is a pick for HoloLens users and companies who are thinking about deploying the HoloLens. There's a program called Windows Autopilot, which is a way for Microsoft to help companies provision and manage their PCs so that if you're an IT pro and you're like having to set up all these PCs and put them out to your employees, Windows Autopilot will help simplify that and help you manage that. So now Microsoft is taking the Windows Autopilot program and they're applying it to the HoloLens, which is kind of interesting. Since HoloLens runs Windows 10 at its core, I guess it's possible and it makes sense. The questionable part to me here, or the part that kind of gave me pause, is are there really a lot of businesses out there who want to do massive deployments of HoloLens? maybe, you know, like this is for people who have to like take hundreds or thousands of devices and set them up, provision them, manage them. So right now this is a private preview program. So maybe Microsoft is anticipating at some point HoloLens will be a mass deployed device among companies. But right now it just seems kind of weird. In fact, when I wrote this post about this being a private preview program that just opened up, I got an immediate email from someone who said, "This is fake news." And I said, "No, it's a real private preview program and it does exist." So yeah, if you are somebody who works in a company that is thinking of deploying more than just a couple HoloLens devices, you might want to try to get into this limited private preview of Windows Autopilot for HoloLens. Kind of interesting and odd.
Is it self-driving HoloLens?
It's the HoloLens goggle things, you know, that we've played with and shown on the show. So, yeah.
And another Enterprise pick.
Yes. And this one, kind of gave me a little sigh today when I read about it. So Microsoft's been on this rebranding kick for a lot of things lately. Everybody knows, or you may know, I should say, Office 365 Pro Plus has been rebranded Microsoft 365 Apps. Well, yesterday, they put out another post saying, not only are we rebranding the product, but we're going to rebrand all of the servicing rings around the product too. So there's a whole list of things like the monthly channel targeted becomes the current channel preview. The semi-annual channel becomes the semi-annual enterprise channel. There's all this branding and naming change that they're adding. The two things to take away besides the new names, they're adding a brand new channel called the monthly enterprise channel. So if you're a company that is deploying Office 365 for a lot of employees and you want more control over how feature updates are made and when they're made, you know, something that would give you as the IT admin more control, you want to get into this new monthly enterprise channel. And also, if you have a new brand new Office 365 tenant that is being set up starting June 9th, Microsoft is automatically going to enroll your tenants in the current channel, which means you're going to get updates, feature updates to Office 365 really fast. So they're trying to get people to, like we talked about earlier on the show, get all the latest features faster. Like they put out these feature updates to Office 365 not just once a month, but sometimes multiple times a month. So if you're in that current channel, you're going to get a lot of feature updates on not just one on Patch Tuesday. You could get multiple ones in a month. So yeah, you want to go check their blog posts about this and their documentation about this to make sure that your company is on the right servicing channel if you're somebody who uses Office 365 / Microsoft 365 apps, as it's now called.
And this is why it's better not to work at home.
This is why we have beer picks on Windows Weekly.
I was working at home and I had this, I was in the shower. And yep. I thought, let's rebrand it all. Let's just rebrand it all. We can do that.
Right?
Change it all.
I picked up the cell phone, which was in the shower, and I said, Bob, we're rebranding everything.
We're doing everything.
Yeah.
This is see, if you're all in an office together, there's going to be somebody there to talk you down.
Exactly. Yeah.
Right.
Exactly.
Now, talk us down with some beer.
Yeah. So there's this new trend in craft beer right now of more lighter, sessionable beers. And it's partially because we're coming towards summer in the United States now. But it's also people count calories. And if you're drinking some of these big beers that I love, they can be very high calorie, like 300, 400 calories for one beer.
It's like a donut.
It is. It's like eating a donut or a dessert, right? So there are all these new 4-point-something% beers. They call them sessionable. And I just tried one of these recently. It's from Night Shift, which is in Everett, Massachusetts. They are a really great brewery, and they have a new beer called Night Light.
Well named. Good.
Well named. 4.3%. It's a lager. And it's actually got a lot of flavor. Like a lot of these beers I'm kind of like, is it going to taste like Bud? No, this actually has a lot more flavor, and it's considered like a light craft beer. But if you're looking for something like that, you know, wherever we end up having social gatherings or remote social gatherings for the summer, and you want something not too high ABV, not too high calorie, this might be a good choice. Night Shift Brewing Night Light.
I like the light bright design.
I know. Yeah, the can's really cool too. Yep.
Wake up the night. Nightlight. You won't get fat and you won't get drunk.
But the sow might get you.
But the sow's coming for you, baby.
It's good. I kind of shy away from those kind of beers. I'm just like, you know, if I'm going to drink a beer, I want it to be like.
Drink.
Yeah, exactly. But then when you have it, you're like, you know, there's something to be said for being able to walk afterwards and like, you know, converse.
I'm not walking or talking. I might as well.
No. I was going to say those things are overrated.
I've lost my stamina. We had a Cinco de Mayo party last week, and I fell asleep after one tequila. 8:30 at night.
One 10.5% beer, and I'm kind of like, and that's it for me. Good night.
Good night. Sleepy time.
It's like those barley wine beers. I used to recommend just get in the bed. Yeah. And then start drinking it.
Paul, did you order your rosé slushy machine? Summertime's coming. What are you going to do? Got to make your own.
Yeah.
Make your own slushies. Yes,
that's a good point. We've been going through inexpensive Chardonnays and have discovered that most of them are terrible.
That's why they're cheap. As Trader Joe said, life's too short to drink cheap wine.
Well. Sometimes you don't have a choice.
Yeah, I know.
The supply is limited. Lisa,
we have, in theory, we have a wine closet, right? Which is, and there's lots of bottles in there. Lisa says, I'm out of wine. I said, Lisa, there's 100 bottles back there. She says, all junk.
Well, you know, we're all making sacrifices.
Yeah,
honey.
Lisa, pick come on. I don't want to drink any of that stuff. I want some good wine. Picked a bad time to give up methamphetamine. That's all I can say.
Turkish prison.
Yeah. That's really my new Jones. I just watching comedies. God, yeah. Old comedies. The older the better.
I introduced my kids to The Princess Bride the other night.
That's a magical moment in a child's life. Wait a minute, your kids are grown.
I know.
They didn't see it till now?
No. No.
Have fun storming the castle.
Exactly.
What a great movie.
Classic. Oh, inconceivable.
Inconceivable. It's inconceivable. That's Paul Thurrott. He is at Thurrott.com. That's his blog, thurrogood.com. You'll find his books at leanpub.com, The Field Guide to Windows 10, chief amongst them. Still got the posters? Because those are great. If you can get the posters if you're going to buy the book. It'll all come to you magically through contactless delivery through a federal official. A uniformed officer of the federal government will bring it to your door.
Pretty sure my UPS guy just throws stuff from a street at it. Like, just takes a picture of the house. Like, you verified the delivery.
I want to see, you know, because now they do have pictures of the package in your porch. Mm-hmm. I think they should attempt to take the picture while it's sailing through the air. Would even be better.
Yeah. Exactly.
Like a football.
Yeah. Wow. Yep. Nice action. Nice loft on that. Good spiral on that package. Mary Jo Foley, wasn't your earbuds, or you just haven't checked yet?
I haven't checked yet.
Mary Jo, such good impulse control.
It's downstairs. I have to go take the elevator.
Oh, she's excited. Let's wrap this up. Mary Jo Foley's at allaboutmicrosoft.com, her ZDNet blog, and there's something exciting in her foyer. So we're gonna let them both of them
Let's see.
Go.
It's either going to be vegetables or Surface earbuds.
Either one.
I know. It might be my vegetable box. Yeah.
Oh, either one would be happy. You get vegetable boxes in Manhattan?
Yeah. Misfit Market. Have you heard of that?
No. That's awesome.
Yep.
We have a farm box that comes, but we live in farm country. Misfit Market.
Yeah. Huh?
That's really cool.
Yeah.
It comes from Jersey, right?
Yeah, ours comes from New Jersey, but it's all over the East Coast.
Ugly and imperfect produce.
But it's all organic. It's all organic, yeah, too.
That's great.
Really good price. You
know. Yeah, why waste it? The potato that looks like Richard Nixon, why waste it?
Exactly.
Eat it.
Who cares?
Who cares? Well, that's hysterical.
I've gotten some good stuff from them.
Sometimes
it's always a little weird. Like, you hold it up and you're like, what is it, though?
What is this thing? Kind of
this
like
is
the
awesome.
Fish from The Simpsons with the three eyes.
I like this because it always bothers me that everything looks so perfect in the store.
I know.
Especially in New York. Even a bodega. You go to the bodega. Each one is perfect. And you think, what happened to the real vegetables?
I know, right? Yeah. Yep.
Nice. Oh, this is a good idea. Misfitsmarket.com. Okay, go. We do this show every Wednesday, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 1700 UTC. You can watch or listen live at twit.tv/live. You can get on-demand versions at our website, twit.tv/ww. They're also on YouTube. You can ask your Amazon Echo or your Google device, hey, you know who, play Windows Weekly Podcast. And that'll play it for you. You can hear the most recent version. You can also subscribe. That's probably the easiest thing. It involves no talking to yourself. Just go to your favorite podcast app and search for Windows Weekly. Press the subscribe button. It's magic. You'll get it every week from then on. Thanks, Paul. Thanks, Mary Jo. Have a safe, healthy, fruitful week. And we'll see you next week on Windows Weekly. Actually, we'll see you after Build.
That's right. It'll
be fun. Yeah.
Take care.
Hi, I'm Jason Howell, host of All About Android, where each week I'm joined by Ron Richards, Florence Ion, and a rotating crew of Android journalists, developers, and enthusiasts, where we talk about the latest news, hardware, and apps for the Android faithful. You can subscribe by going to twit.tv/AAA or find the show in your podcatcher of choice. That's All About Android.